I will formally begin by saying, oh, how glad I am to see you. So many dear friends and folks that I would love to get to know. Today we are in the second day of a weekend retreat, so I just want to send a little extra love out to our retreatants. Retreat practice is very beautiful and can be a place of vast, conditionless ease, and also it can be really hard. So however you're doing, I'm glad you're here. Take heart. I hope those of you who are just checking in can perhaps just soak up some of the energy of our practice. And for those of us who've been practicing together, maybe we can take in the energy of all these people showing that we all value Zen practice together. So I'm going to begin my talk today with a story, and I'll move into what will be more apparently Dharma as the talk goes. So a few weeks ago, I was up in northern Minnesota near the headwaters of the Mississippi River at a prayer circle, listening to Ojibwe great-grandmother Mary Lyons speak. She was wearing like an amazing hand-embroidered dress, a long skirt, all different colors. She had numerous daughters and granddaughters flanking and backing her, all wearing similar attire. They're quite regal. And they were standing in a glen of beautiful towering trees that were just shimmering in the morning breeze and light. There was a lake down below them, glittering in the sunshine. They were surrounded by a huge contingent of people representing many different world religions with signs that said things like, stop line 3, and we are here to protect the water. And great-grandmother Lyons was really funny. Telling someone about how someone else is funny isn't that funny. I know, I don't remember exactly how she was funny, but she was able to just have such delight and mirth at the foibles of herself and her family, and to share that in a place where there were like, you know, 300 people and a big press contingent with all the... And I was like, that is very wonderful. But although she would say these very funny things, her speaking was principally a really unflinching look at the violence and oppression, the living day-to-day existence of the continuing legacy of violence against the Anishinaabe people and indigenous people in the United States at the hands of settlers and descendants of settlers, white people like me. And, you know, I might get mixed up what she was talking about a little bit because there were other people there. I mean, the main impetus for us gathering was to be part of a very large nonviolent direct action to stop the Line 3 pipeline, which is being built in northern Minnesota. Indigenous activists have been leading a movement to try and stop the construction of the Line 3 pipeline through their land for about 10 years. I'll be brief. Main reasons. One, the pipeline runs through a whole bunch of sacred wild rice beds. It is slated to run underneath and over a whole bunch of rivers, including two crossings of the Mississippi River near its headwaters. Pipelines leak and spill. It's well documented, and it happens with frequency. I don't know if you saw the one, there was a gas pipeline leak in the Gulf of Mexico last week. It was like a boiling cauldron of fire in the ocean that was about 80 yards wide. It's one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in my life. Pipelines leak and they spill. And also, fossil fuel projects tend to be followed by sex trafficking of indigenous women and seem to be create spikes in the endemic condition of murdered and missing indigenous women that we have in the United States. We had a whole conference here near the MZMC that many of us attended about missing and murdered indigenous women and how to create new conditions so we can end this endemic situation. She talked about boarding schools, the attempted ethnocide of indigenous people in the United States and Canada as well. So it was powerful. Like, wow, you know. Embedded in this is the fact that the treaties that the United States made with the Anishinaabe people are being violated pretty clearly in the construction of the pipeline. So it was powerful. And near the end of her peroration, she said, "I hope you show up in a good way. We were all getting ready to like march down to this road and find out like what the police were going to do to the people there. Because we weren't legally supposed to be there. We were just engaging in treaty protected activities following indigenous leaders. But anyway, she was like, I hope you will show up in a good way. And I thought, now that is a message I can take to heart. I hope you will show up in a good way. And, you know, I thought immediately of, I can't remember who liked to talk about it so much, but uprightness. I think Suzuki and Katagiri both talked about the posture of our Zazen as a posture of our being, our way of meeting and encountering the world, of showing up in a good way. So, in Buddha Dharma, the emphasis in all different ways and throughout many different traditions is on the way, the quality of intention and mind we bring to how we show up. So there's an entire thought system and a worldview that is constructed to make meaningful and important the way we show up moment to moment. And to say that is in fact the most important thing. For people like most of the people in this meeting who are conditioned to believe that the most important thing is a material reality that can be manipulated, it's a very challenging body of teaching. Because we think what will be a good thing is when I have accomplished something or caused something to happen. But Buddha Dharma really doesn't spend much time on that and is giving us an entire worldview about how are you showing up? What are you bringing? Are you bringing compassion? Are you bringing energy? Are you bringing joyfulness? Or are you bringing despair? Are you bringing anger? What is it? And, you know, the thing is, if you know, especially for those of you in the retreat, you might be like, yes, I want to show up in a good way. That's in a good way. That's why I'm here. And I can't. So don't just tell me to show up in a good way. It's hard to show up in a good way. If you're paying attention, I think you will notice our minds do a lot of stuff that isn't all that helpful. A lot of stuff we don't even know it's doing. So the thing is, we can show up in a good way for how we are. This is one of the distinct qualities of Buddhism, to realize that it's like, oh, if there is despair here, how can I show up in a good way for despair? If there is othering and blaming and shaming, how can I show up in a good way for that stuff that's happening in my mind and my heart? There is rage. How can I show up for that in a way that's good? And this can be done for within our own bodies and minds and hearts, and it can be done with who we encounter. Yeah, possible. Possible. So I'm kind of sticking with the same realm of stories here. So a couple weeks after I was at what was called the Treaty People Gathering, where great-grandmother Mary Lyons spoke, and we had this big nonviolent direct action. there was, I went up a couple weeks later to what's called the Welcome Water Protectors Camp. By the way, if anyone is comes out of this talk and thinks, I want to be a part of this deal, just look up Welcome Water Protectors and you can find a way to be a part of what's going on. Oh, I forgot to mention with the Line 3 pipeline that it's pretty commonly held belief among anyone who is knowledgeable about climate change that fossil fuel infrastructure construction is counterproductive. And in fact, there have been major bodies that have said one of the first things we have to do is stop making infrastructure that makes it easier to consume and make money from fossil fuels. So another piece I kind of forgot to mention. So anyway, there I was at Welcome Water Protector Camp, which is a one of many camps in northern Minnesota where people are doing actions to resist the construction of the pipeline. So at that site, Winona LaDuke and her colleague Tanya Abood built an Anishinaabe prayer lodge at the site where the drill is supposed to go under the Mississippi River. And they have treaty protected rights to do ceremony, hunt and gather on that land, which is public land, it's not privately owned. And so according to the treaty, they have the right to be in that land and we'll see. They've been there so far, and we're waiting to see if they will be evicted. Anyway, so there's a whole camp there near that prayer lodge. And, you know, I've been up there several times and it's been inspiring. And when I was up there the last time, I went up with a contingent from Minnesota Interfaith Power and Light, which is a wonderful group of people. And so we went down to the river when we first got there. We toured the site. We looked at where the pipeline is being constructed. We looked at where the prayer lodge is. We went down to the river, which is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And we prayed. And we prayed in many different languages and religions. And we just made a big circle and we sang. And people could just put a song in. So I was like, oh, I know something for this. So I recited one of the great verses of Chan literature. Because we were standing in this really beautiful place and you could hear constantly the roar of the drill, which was doing horizontal drilling to get underneath the river. And the trucks coming in constantly. So I recited this verse written by a Chinese laywoman named Chen about 1,000 years ago. Up on the high slopes, I see only woodcutters. Everyone has the spirit of the knife and the axe. How can they see the mountain flowers reflected in the water? Glorious. Red. I'll just recite it again. Up on the high slopes, I see only woodcutters. Everyone has the spirit of the knife and the axe. How can they see the mountain flowers reflected in the water? Glorious. Red. So, you know, I was just thinking of her seeing the environmental degradation and just feeling that pang of like, couldn't we just put down these axes and just see how amazing and beautiful it is here? Why do we need all this stuff? We have so much stuff. It's bizarre. So anyway, I recited this verse and I was like, thank you, Laywoman Chen, for showing up here for us. It's very appreciative. And then I went back to camp and Jim Northrup came, who's the son of another Jim Northrup, and was like, okay, I'm going to lead a work crew of people who've showed up today. I need a whole bunch of people. We're going to build a new prayer lodge next to the existing prayer lodge. And we need 40 hard maples about 2 inches in diameter near head height. So here's the axe and here's the nippers and go out in the woods and cut down 40 trees. And I thought, now that is hilarious. So I got my spirit of my knife and my axe because I was there to follow Indigenous leadership. That was what I had gone there to do. One of the ways I can dismantle the illusions that come with my identity of like thinking that I should have all the stuff that I have is by going to places where people don't have that stuff and listening to them so I can crack through my delusions and we can get more free. But anyway, I hadn't really planned on axing. So, you know, the thing here is like, okay, a giant horizontal drill is more environmentally destructive than a handheld axe. I think we can probably all agree on that. I don't know. But at the same time, what this moment showed me is the degree, the range of degree. For laywoman Chen, just the fact that people were so focused on getting their firewood and taking it down the mountain was enough to see the pain of how they were meeting the world. And for us, that threshold is far, far higher. I think, probably. I don't know about you. So it's a matter of degree. It's not a matter of absolutes. But anyway, we went out and, you know, we cut the trees. It was beautiful practice. You know, I'm trained in Zen practice, so doing manual labor is like one of my, I'm just like, sweet. I get to do Zen practice actually at home. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I'm like, why can't I bring the spirit of practice into my house? That's why I love being on retreat with you guys yesterday, because I got my bathroom so clean and I really managed to enjoy it. Anyway, went out in the woods and we had a crew of a bunch of people. We cut these trees, we trimmed them up, we brought them out so they could be used to make the lodge, which will happen. It happened after we left. I was excited. I was like, this is really cool. I get to contribute to making this prayer lodge. What an amazing thing. I was like, wow. And I was like, what about the trees? You know, I'm a little embarrassed to admit I didn't, you know, I got that axe and I wasn't like, oh, tree, think of all the life you've had and your tree parents and your little tree babies who came down in little seeds and I'm taking your life. You know, I didn't really take a lot of time to make that offering because I was like, oh, we'll make a lodge. Jim Northrup, Tanya Booth, and Winona LaDuke, that's so cool. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I'm doing Zen practice. I'm just in it. I was just like, just one stroke, the feeling, the body. What about the trees? Total absorption in activity is not enough. In the Gendro Koan, Dogen says, you should know that the water is life and the air is life. You should know that the water is life and the air is life. And I've been hanging out with all these banners that say water is life. We are here to protect the water. And when he says that in the Gendro Koan, he's been talking about a bird and a fish and how they live in the water and the air. But we kind of think like the bird lives and the air is where it lives, and the fish lives, and the water is where it lives. Dogen's saying there is no where you live. There's only life. There's not a us and a them. There's not a material world separate. Well, this is back to this worldview that makes it so we don't look at a world of things to manipulate, but instead, we look at a place where the quality of our intentionality is what really matters. And this is why I'm gonna shift a little bit and we're gonna dive into some Dharma here that if you find yourself for the next 10 minutes just thinking like, I don't know what's happening or why that man is talking, that's okay. You can just enjoy the fact that you exist in a human body, hearing sounds, and that will be cool. And if this is meaningful, that's great. So, you know, Dogen says the water is life. So this is about seeing things as living, instead of dead and inert. A materialist worldview gives us an inert world, and that inherently will affect how we treat it. So I'm going to read you some passages from Dogen's Body and Mind Study of the Way. So how do we study the way with the whole of ourselves? And in this thing, he sort of shows the body is different than the mind, and also that they're non-different. And here I'm going to kind of focus on the non-different side. So when I read this, I'm going to be using the, he'll be using the word mind quite a bit. And he'll be basically saying that everything is mind. And the thing is, with mind-only Buddhism, it can be kind of confusing unless you understand what we mean by mind when we say mind-only. And what this means is the totality of what is experienced. So when we say mind, everything is mind-only, we're just pointing out that nothing happens for us that is not mediated by the way our mind is working. So when you look at your little device, your laptop, you can look at it. You only know that in the way that you know it through the processes of your consciousness. We call that mind only. The mind only view is not intended to say like mind is an absolute real thing. In fact, we often say it is empty. And I know it is a blessed moment when my mind is empty. But anyway, so yeah, mind only is about seeing the whole field of our experience as being inseparable from the process of how we're experiencing it. And back to this point of we have a worldview that makes it, it's really important the quality we show up with, because that what creates the conditions for the way we will perceive the world. So if we perceive the world as being alive, we will begin to treat the world like living things. And if we see it as dead matter, we will treat it like dead matter. So I'm encouraging people to see it as alive. I want to read just a little Dogen for you. So this is where, like I said, this might, this if you feel confused by this, that's okay. It's just words. Enjoy. Now, mountains, rivers, earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars are mind. At just this moment, what is it that appears directly in front of you? But when we say mountains, rivers, and earth, we do not merely mean the mountains, rivers, and earth where you are standing. I'm going to go on. He describes practice a little bit, and then he says, because the study of the way is like this, while walls, tiles, and pebbles are mind. Other than this, there is no triple world mind only. Triple world means past, future, and present. There is no phenomenal universe that is mind only. Mind is walls, tiles, and pebbles. Put together before the Zhantung era and taken apart after the Zhantung era, splattered with mud and soaking wet, binding the self with no rope. Mind has the power to attract a pearl and the ability to be a pearl in water. Some days the pearl is melted. Some days it is crushed. There are times when this pearl is reduced to extremely fine powder. Mind doesn't converse with bare pillars or rub shoulders with hanging lanterns. In this manner, the mind studies the way running barefoot. Who can get a glimpse of it? The mind studies the way turning somersaults. Everything tumbles over with it. So I'm definitely not going to try and explain that. Mind, it doesn't rub shoulders with things because it's inseparable from them. There can be an enormous freedom, somersaults, rolling, revolution, transformation. When we get really free and stop seeing it as all these little discrete objects that we're trying to judge and manipulate. Wake up into this moment, this wholeness, where everything is alive, just as alive as we are, as alive as anything can be. So our practice can help us to realize, from one way of looking at it, that triple world is mind only, which is a quote for the Avatamsaka, from the Avatamsaka Sutra, for those of you who like that sort of thing. Past, future, and present, mind only. To realize that, or to realize that water is life, and air is life, and bird is life, and the fish is life. There's no life outside of anything or apart from anything. There's only life. And we can taste this. And it helps to take the time to just slow down and make the activities of daily living simple so that the tendencies of mind that are constantly dividing and turning the world into objects can subside. And we can realize the wholeness that's here. So during the Treaty People gathering, there were lots of Buddhists there, lots. I put up a Google Doc just to get the names of people who are showing up to this big nonviolent direct action training and action day. And I have 40 people on the list, or we had 40 people on the list, which was just wonderful, and all different from all of different traditions. And then when I got my first day to camp, I pulled up to the, this was amazing. I pulled up to the gate for the camp and there was someone, you know, at the gate, just kind of to give you orientation. I was like, oh, I know that person, but I know I'm going to see tons of people here. I know. So I can't remember who it is, but I love them. I'm very happy to see them. So I got out and I was like, oh, it's great to see you. And I gave him a hug. And then I was like, oh, you got a name tag. And I'm like, I'm trying to place you. And then it turned out, they were a Zen priest from Jokoji in California, who I've spent time practicing with down in the Bay Area, who'd come all the way up for this gathering. And then 20 minutes later, I met someone else like, oh, I just came from Great Vow Monastery in Oregon. So, wow, you know, it might be that if you spend time slowing down or realizing that the water is life and the air is life, that your body will take action. It's motivated by that realization. So anyway, while we were at that camp in the mornings, a bunch of us would go down and do zazen before the many activities of the day would begin and do a little Soto Zen ritual because there are a lot of Soto Zen people among us. And, you know, we slowed down. And we could really take in the beauty of the lake and the sound of the trees. And the last day that I was there, I went to sit down. And about 10 yards in front of me, there was a leatherback turtle laying eggs. Life. And I just sat there. And she was working a lot harder than me. I could tell. We were just part of life together. And I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to take any pictures. We were just there together. It took her a while. But she had to bury him really carefully. So we were there together for about 45 minutes. We didn't have any agenda. It was just intimacy. So I want to do a little I love to do this during these Sunday talks. I want to do like a little guided meditation practice. And I'm going to start by just saying, if you would like to stand up, this will work well standing up. And if you would like to remain sitting down, you can remain sitting down. I'm just going to start to provide you some invitations, and you can do with them what you would like. So, I'm going to invite you to close your eyes for a moment and just really focus the attention on the body, maybe the whole of the body here. Noticing the malleable quality of attention. And drawing the attention into just the belly, concentrating more on the sensations of breathing. And then moving awareness up to the region around the heart center, the chest. Maybe the shoulders as well, noticing wherever there are distinct sensations there. And now, in a minute, I'm going to invite you to open your eyes and start doing something, but I'm going to prepare you for it first. So what I'm going to invite you to do is just spend about 5 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, hanging out where you are, talking to the things that you are encountering with your senses as if they are living beings that you are very grateful for and care about. So you can just like pick things up and like hold them and tell them like, thank you for being my cup. I have this cup, I'm holding. Thank you for being my cup. Or maybe if there's a smell of flowers or incense, whoa, thank you, I'm so glad you're here. It's really nice that you came. So yeah, just, you get a few minutes, I'll ring a bell to kind of encourage you to come back and sit back down. And just hang out and start talking to your household as if you are grateful and you care. You're welcome to say things out loud, but you don't have to. Thank you. All right, well, welcome back. I'm sure all the things in your house feel very comforted. Why are you showing up? This is a tradition that says that's what matters the most. You know, when I was sewing the robe for my ordination, Tomoe Katagiri was my teacher. And I really have had a pretty aversive relationship with sewing practice, and it was really, really hard for me. That might be an understatement. Anyway, so I showed up having sewed my blue rock suit, and it was time to sew all this huge amount of black stuff, and I was pretty uptight about it. But I found my favorite needle, and I'd had a needle that really worked for me. And it was like I got out my sewing stuff, and I'm like, oh, here's my – and I was sitting there – with Tomoe, you know, we don't talk really when we practice, but I was so happy that I saw my needle. I said, oh, this is my really good friend from when I sewed my rock suit. And I was kind of embarrassed. No one said anything because we don't say it much. And I was kind of embarrassed. I was like, oh, that was kind of a weird thing to do. I don't know Tomoe that well. Is that respectful? I don't really know. And yeah. So I'm like, we would sew together every week, and about 2 weeks later, we were doing something, and I was kind of messing something up, and she came over, and she said, yeah, could I see your good friend for a minute? No. When I interviewed people for the article about Tomoe, Andrea Martin said she consistently showed that everything matters. Everything matters. There's lots of ways to help us see that everything matters and to care. But it seems to take some practice. And I will take Dogen's fact that the mind turns somersaults to suggest that it takes some creativity. So, you know, you can show up in a good way. I am utterly confident because I see people do it all the time. I'm so grateful when I feel like, I think maybe I'm showing up in a good way right now. I don't really know. You know, I could definitely be wrong. I've been wrong so many times. That's okay too. I can show up in a good way for questioning. But, you know, to show up in a good way in a conventional sense, you know, I think probably make, you know, kind of, oh yeah, I should show up in a good way. I can feel what that means. You do something, you engage in an activity with good heart. Yeah, cool. But, you know, I just want to say that according to the Mahayana tradition and our beloved founder Dogen Zenji, you already showed up in a good way. How cool is that? Like, all showing up is showing up in a good way. There's no other kind. He opens the Genjo Koan thus. As all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, practice, birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. As all dharmas, all phenomena, as all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization, there is practice and birth and death, and there are Buddhas and sentient beings. The only ground on which you can claim that anything exists, according to this tradition, is that it is already Buddha, or already Dharma, or as we say in Yogacara, it is of complete realized nature. So, you know, we can realize this is already complete and whole. It already, all the qualities that we say that Buddhism aspires to, non-duality, emptiness of separation and duration, compassion, interdependence, it's all already the way it is. It's pretty nice. Hey, guess what? It's like we're in a religious tradition, everybody, except for when we're a religious tradition where there are extensive logical proofs for why that is true. They also prove that it's not true because it's non-duality. But what do you want? You're already complete. We forget it, and that's okay. But our forgetting is also part of the completeness. Wow. So if we can remember that everything is already showing up in a good way, that it is already the Buddha Dharma, then that can help us to show up in a good way, in a conventional sense. In a conventional sense. So our life isn't about trying to make something else happen or control something else or make this or that or get that or gain that or get rid of that or change this, but just to be here with compassion and heart and understanding that we're all in this together.